Alphazon Tape Tricks Archive Recordings. The Story of Radio England. Narrated by Tony Hawkins.
England's finest, swinging radio, England, where the music is used.
The story of Radio England begins with the success of another station which started broadcasting on the high seas in those pioneering days of the early 60s.
If you want to sail in England, if you want to tell everybody what you've got, radio's the way to do it. Radio London is the very spot.
For further information about Radio London and what it can mean to you, contact Radlon Sales Limited, 17 Curzon Street, London. Do it today.
Call Mayfair 5361.
In the early days of Radio London, before the station had established itself as a big success, one of the Texan investors began to cause problems for Philip Birch, who was managing Radio London.
He disagreed very much with the way I was running it and wanted it run in a different way. This was all in the early weeks of Radio London, the usual sort of boardroom politics that one runs into with new businesses. So we had a boardroom battle. Unfortunately, I won, and so he went. And he said, well, fine, he was going to set up a radio station to show me how it really should be done.
And so the Radio England project was born. Together with other Texan backers, plans were made to start another station. Two stations, in fact, because Britain Radio and Radio England were to be the first twin sister stations broadcasting from the same ship. Three Americans would manage the operation. Bill Vick, who was to be managing director, Jack Nixon, who was to be coordinator of the station, and the final member of the triumvirate, Don Pearson, Johnny Walker.
Bill Vick was a very mild-mannered, quiet Texas gentleman, very well-mannered, called people sir, you know, had a very crew cut, sort of typical American on the one hand, and then Don Pearson was the sort of JR figure, 10-gallon hat and huge boots and quite a colourful pair they were.
Soon, news reached the British press that a former U.S. Navy Liberty ship, the 480-ton, 186-foot motor vessel Olga Patricia, was being fitted out as an offshore radio station in Texas and Biscayne Harbor, Miami, Florida.
Pop radio pirate ships face new challenge. A radio ship is being fitted out at Miami, Florida, ready to invade Britain's pop pirates. 9 U.S. disc jockeys have been recruited, and an advance party is already in London. Probably, the 480-ton Olga Patricia will be broadcasting to Britain in 2 months. She will transmit two programs simultaneously, one devoted to pop, the other to soft music. The 176-foot vessel was brought to a Miami dockyard 3 months ago from the Panama Canal Zone and painted black. A 100-foot radio mast has been fitted and 2 50,000-watt transmitters installed. The men in the syndicate are represented in Miami by a Texan named Don Pearson. He refuses to discuss the project, except to claim,
there is also British money backing us.
The disc jockeys have been recruited by an American, known only as Ron, and describing himself as program director.
Next, the news broke that the Panamanian registered ship was on its way.
Jack Nixon, at 5'8", the skinniest Texan you're likely to meet, flew into London this week with peace in his heart and an offering of goodwill to Postmaster General Anthony Wedgwood Benn. An unlikely combination of virtues in the circumstances. With 16 unnamed British, US and Canadian backers, he's entering the pirate radio business. He's floating two stations in one, Radio England and Britain Radio, beyond the 3-mile limit off Harwich. He claimed they'll cover the whole of England 24 hours a day, and with characteristic Texan understatement, he promises that they'll be
the biggest and bestest of them all.
The Olga Patricia, aptly renamed the Laissez-Faire, was now braving the unpredictable Atlantic Ocean. 18 months before, its predecessor, the former minesweeper Galaxy, had undertaken the same journey. That ship had become the home of Big L, Radio London. Johnny Walker remembers waiting for the Laissez-Faire.
I got hired in March of 1966, and they said the boat will be coming on, you know, in a couple of weeks' time. A couple of weeks went by and nothing happened. And I was hanging around London, you know, going into the office every day. And it all seemed very disorganized and very ill-prepared. And we also had a DJ called Colin Nicol, who'd been on Radio Atlanta, the ship that later became, you know, Caroline South. And he was asking them all sorts of questions about the state of preparedness of the ship and was saying to me that he said, this really seems wrong. You know, they haven't even got any huge rubber tires hung over the side of the ship, which are vital, you know, when the tender comes alongside. Although they'd made out in the sort of hype that they really had the whole thing all together, it seemed that it was a pretty much of a shambles.
In the 1960s, some American radio stations began to prefix their names with a superlative. In the UK, Radio London was known as Wonderful Radio London.
Wonderful Radio London.
And so Radio England became Swinging Radio England.
Swinging Radio England, where there's action.
Two 55 kilowatt transmitters sounded like a real challenge for Radio Caroline South and Radio London. Both stations had 50 kilowatt transmitters. Radio 390 also had reason to be troubled. They claimed a power output of 35 kilowatts, although it was widely known within the pirate radio industry that they only had a 10 kilowatt transmitter. The excellent size and sighting of the antenna system on the Red Sands forts in the Thames estuary meant Radio 390's signal was superb for such a low-powered transmitter. However, Britain Radio, Radio England's twin station, would be 55 kilowatts, and their format, like that of Radio 390, would be easy listening. Pierre Vic, the station's management company, had opened offices at 32 Curzon Street, just over the road from Radlon Sales, Radio London's offices. Curzon Street was a plush West End address, close to Park Lane, with the Hilton Hotel and Playboy Club at the end of the road. Just off Curzon Street was Chesterfield Gardens, the offices of Radio Caroline. Pearl and Dean, the cinema advertising company, were to handle advertising. So it seemed to both Caroline and London that Pierre Vic meant business. The Olga Patricia, renamed the Laissez-Faire, had now taken up position off the Essex coast, and Johnny Walker remembers his first visit to the ship.
Awful letdown when we actually got on the boat. I mean, it was a pretty rusty old boat. Apparently Don Pearson had said in Texas, where the boat was outfitted, that he wanted a radio station on a ship in 2 weeks, and he didn't care what it cost. So they prefabricated a room for the two transmitters, and then these holds were just lowered into the ship. And the studio section was also a big room lowered into the hold. And Rick Randall, another DJ, had been trying to wire up a board on the way over as the ship sailed from Texas up to the North Sea. The first thing that went wrong was that it stopped in Miami and picked up Ron O'Quinn and another DJ. And the antenna had been put up, and apparently in the ripples of Miami Harbor, the antenna was shaking like crazy. And the moment it got outside the harbor and into the open sea, bang, the whole antenna system fell down. So then the ship put into Lisbon and tried to repair the antenna there, which still wasn't fixed by the time it got over to England.
On the 3rd of May 1966, the first test transmission began. The engineer held up transmissions until a copy of the Yellow Rose of Texas was found and transmitted this as the first record. For the first time, Radio London and Radio Caroline found themselves with powerful opposition.
We don't want all the listeners, just want you.
Walking McCat named Dog, Norma Tadega, the in sound for the in crowd, Swinging Radio England, your much more music station. We're on the air broadcasting on 355 meters in the medium wave band, on the air at reduced power for transmitter test purposes. For any reception reports, please send them to Swingin' Radio England, 32 Curzon Street, London, W1.
Swingin' Radio England.
The late and great Buddy Holly this time. It's by Peter and Gordon, the Oldie Goldie tune called True Love Way is on Swingin' Radio England on the air for broadcast test purposes on full power. It's 4:13 in the afternoon. Ron O'Quinn, good afternoon. How in the world are you? England and the continent's most powerful offshore radio voice. This is Swingin' Radio England 355 on your meter dial.
in the medium wave band leak type thing there. If you'd like to address a card, a letter to tell us how the signal's coming in, we certainly would appreciate it. Be glad to answer back any questions you might have via letter. Send it to 32 Curzon Street, London, W1. 32 Curzon Street, London, W1. The song here from the BBC television hit show now.
Originally, Radio England began transmissions on 355 meters, whilst Britain Radio, hallmark of quality listening, put out its test transmissions on 227 meters. After a short time, these frequencies were changed, and Britain Radio moved to 355, whilst Radio England changed to 227.
Peggy Lee, and it ain't necessarily so. Well, it is, too, because it's 9:30, and you're listening to Britain Radio broadcasting on 355 meters in the medium wave band. 30 minutes away from now, it's, what's his name? Who's your name again? That's it.
Britain Radio, that's weather.
It'll be cold today, but for most parts of the British Isles, they will be dry with sunny periods. Some, good. There will be some snow showers, especially over high ground in the north of England, Scotland, and Wales. Tonight will begin to be cold with temperatures well below the freezing mark. So if you haven't got antifreeze in the car, booze it up. 15 minutes from now, we'll have...
Hey, Twinkie Lee. Hey, Gary Walker. Pit Bound from Swingin' Radio England, the Larry Dean radio program. Thanks a lot for all the cards and letters we've received so far from all over, such as Helsinki, Finland, Hamburg, Germany, Munich, Germany, Belgium, all over the place. Thanks a lot for all the cards and letters. If you have any requests or reception reports or something like that, send them to your favorite boss jock, such as me. Larry Dean, care of Swingin' Radio England, 32 Curzon Street, London, W1.
England's finest. Swingin' Radio England. Where the music is new.
Today, this song is Boss Sound number one.
Anyone who did write in received a postcard bearing a picture of the ship and what looked like a handwritten message from Bill Vick.
Many thanks for your interest in our stations. We're on the air to please you, so thanks for your comments. Keep tuned to your number one entertainment. Sincerely, William E. Vick.
You've asked for it. Boss Radio's got it. The brand new car stickers are available now. To get your free Boss-tabulous car sticker, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Boss Car Sticker, 32 Curzon Street, London, West 1. Remember, it's free from the Boss.
Car stickers, when they became available, were high-quality vinyl, printed in color with the Union flag either side and bearing the words Britain Radio England. They were also very difficult to keep in position because no one had thought it necessary to put any glue on them. In those early days, listeners were surprised to hear professionally sung American jingles on both stations. Previously, Radio London had been the only station with its own American jingles. Radio England had bought one of the classic packages produced by PAMS, Production and Marketing Services of Dallas, Texas. The jingle package was PAMS Series 27, Jet Set, and it featured many of the best novelty jingles ever recorded, with sound effects and distinctive brass mixed with a soprano girl singer. The package featured a powerful all-male singing group.
Stay with the fun.
Woo-hee!
Hear all the hits on Swingin' Radio England. Swingin' Radio England. Swingin' Radio England, where the action is. The fastest thing in the air. Swingin' Radio England.
The package was evidently recorded with very little guidance from the management of Radio England, as most of the lyrics remained the standard lyrics which are on the demonstration tape distributed by PAMS.
The fastest thing in the air, 77 WABC.
There were even cuts that Radio England would never use.
Swinging Radio England, with sports in action.
Britain Radio had bought a classic easy listening package from PAMS, the Smart Set.
The bright sounds of the Smart Set. Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio. With music for this, that, and the other.
The sound of news is heard only on Hallmark of Quality, Britain Radio.
Interestingly, some years after Britain Radio closed down, the BBC had this package re-sung for Radio 2.
Two's company, each day when you're in stereo, Radio 2 from the BBC.
The DJs who were hired for Radio England were Americans Ron O'Quinn, Jerry Smethwick, Larry Dean and Rick Randall. The English DJs were Colin Nicol, Graham Gill, Brian Tilney, Johnny Walker and Roger Day.
I heard about Radio England from Dave Cash. He was at the time working for Radio London, and actually that week had been my 21st birthday, and my girlfriend of the time had written up for a request for my birthday, and much surprised, he used to do a breakfast show on Radio London, and he read out my name. And so I thought, ah, I want to get into radio, he's read my request, I'll go and see him. And they used to do Radio London afternoons at the Marquee. And so I went up to the Marquee, looked at him on stage, and then he came off stage and managed to grab him. And it's sort of, hello Dave, remember me, I'm the fella you played a record for. Now, to be fair to him, he actually did say, oh yes, I remember, you're the disc jockey chap, which, load of rubbish of course, he would have assumed that from what I'd said anyway. And I said, well, what's the chances of a gig on Radio London? Because, of course, everyone wanted to get on there. At the time, I was just doing discotheque stuff, as well as being a trainee chartered accountant during the day. He said, well, actually, you've no radio experience, have you? And I said, no. And he said, the best thing you can do is to try for a news station that's starting up very soon. He said, they're American, the ship's coming over very, very soon, and they'll be looking for a whole new lineup of staff. And he said, you stand a much better chance of getting on there. And he said, well, I actually know where these guys are at this moment. And they'd flown in that day, and they were staying at the Hilton Hotel in London. And I went right round to the Hilton Hotel, and I went to the desk and I said, could you tell me, please, where a Mr. Bill Vick is? And they told me the room number. So I went over to the phones, dialed the room, and a gentleman called Don Pearson answered the phone, and I explained who I was, and I was very interested in working for their new radio station. And they said, well, boy, you better come up and see us. It was just like the movies, you know. And I went up to their room at the Hilton, and they plied me with drink, which is no bad thing. I spoke to them for 2 hours. I've never spoken so much in all my life. And I thought, Roger, you've got to seize this opportunity. So I just kept talking and talking and talking, and managed to get across to them that although I didn't have any experience, I'd be very, very keen. And actually, they were looking for somebody like myself who didn't have experience. I didn't realise that at the time. I thought that would go against me. But that was in my favour, because they wanted people that they could train in their style of radio rather than what they'd already heard over here. Later on, they told me they just thought I had a typically English accent, and that would get me across. They thought they were in America rather than Britain, you see. They thought, well, it's kind of cute, isn't it? I mean, millions of other people sounded like me over here. But I wasn't going to let on, but stormed into my chief accountant and said, I'm leaving. He said, congratulations, going to a big firm of accountants, are you? And I said, well, no, as you probably realise, I do part-time disc jockeying, and I've got the chance to join one of those pirate radio stations. Well, after his secretary had brought the smelling salts in, it was as if I'd hit him on the jaw, because he couldn't believe that somebody was leaving to go to one of those naughty old offshore stations.
This is the start of something, boss. The Roger Day Show on the Much More Music Station, Swingin' Radio England.
The boss jocks, bop, bop, play more music, bop.
Number 9 in the Fun 50, Sound of the Happy Hollies, getting Roger Day off to a groovy start, and that's called Stop, Stop, Stop. But don't you stop, 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 gonna have groovy sounds right up until the midnight hour, when it's Baby Bruce Wayne. Turn hi-fi high and the lights are down low, Baby Roo, we gonna go. Our first off, a brand new hit down sound on Swingin' Radio England. This is your hip ship, Brenda Lee, and she's coming on strong, she's looking pretty gorgeous too. Come on now, Brenda, tell us all about it, you're a darling.
Coming on strong.
Johnny Walker was also another disc jockey with no other broadcasting experience. He too managed to get a job with Radio England.
The story of how Johnny Walker got his name is because I was the first English guy to be hired, because he used to use the name Peter D at the clubs in Birmingham. And I was Roger Day, of course, not my real name. But I was allowed to keep my name because I was the first hired, and they didn't want somebody with a similar sounding name, which was common sense. And the order was, as he was the second employed, he should change his name. He wasn't very happy about it. How he got the name was he was looking through a set of old Pam jingles, and one of these jingles had Johnny Walker. And he thought, what a fabulous sounding jingle. You know, the Johnny Walker, the Sonovox thing.
Johnny Walker!
He's on!
And of course, he then became Johnny Walker.
That's a much more music sound of Ike and Tina Turner there. Number 8 in the Buff 40 this week.
So fine, fine, like that. Do you remember? Do you remember?
Yes, do you remember? If anybody can remember which way Johnny Walker went when he came out the Cromwellian Club on Wednesday night, I'd like to know, because I can't remember, and that's why I'm slightly a day late. Anyway, I'm here now, so you've got to put up with me for a fortnight, I'm afraid. So now's the time to switch up.
Bop, jack, bop, bop, play more music now.
So much more music sound on Bus Radio, the Magic Lanterns. It's called Excuse Me, Baby.
Almost dead.
Brian Tilney had come from an unusual background, as Roger Day recalls.
Oh, Brian was a lovely man. I always wanted to meet him again. He was from the East End of London, I think, or anyway, Essex, near London. He'd been a bingo caller, believe it or not. Most untypical disc jockey, he really was. And he was taken on because, same reason as myself, I suppose, was keen. Had no previous radio experience. And his presentation was a lot like a bingo caller would be. Looking back, you know, it was pretty appalling. But was effective at the time.
Graham Gill, who had worked on Radio London, joined after test transmissions, but before the official opening. The Americans, although comparatively young, were all experienced in radio and had been persuaded to join the station with tempting promises.
These American DJs had been told that the English audience would love them. You know, they'll eat you for breakfast, guys. You know, and the food on board will be like Hilton Hotel standard. It's a luxurious ship, you know, the whole flannel. So they sold up everything, these American DJs. They even had their furniture put in the hold on the ship.
Ron O'Quinn, the programme director, was only 23 years old, but had already worked on 8 stations, including the highly rated WFUN in Florida.
Let's boss to number 33 with Rod on the radio at 23 minutes after 2 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, 6 till 10 o'clock, the Jerry Smithwick programme. It's a bang-up show. In fact, you've probably never heard a show as banged up as that one.
This weekend, where the action is, Swingin' Radio England.
You're going to hear a song here that you heard first in the whole wide world on Swingin' Radio England.
Jerry Smithwick was 22 and had been born in Moultrie, Georgia, the same town in which Ron O'Quinn and Larry Dean had been brought up. Working on Radio England gave him very little opportunity to indulge his hobby, which was drag racing.
This is the Jerry Smithwick Show on the much more music station, Swingin' Radio England.
The boss, jack, bop, bop, play more music now.
Ron on the radio goes with the Boss Beatles to America for the Beatles Summer Tour. Swingin' Radio England, your Boss Beatles station. And that's what's known as a hickey. Remember a song from Dick and Dee Dee called Thou Shall Not Steal.
Swingin' Radio England.
Gotta go get
get away, gotta get away.
Good to see him, the Blue Flames, Swinging Radio England, Boss Tune 1.
Get away, go, get
gotta
away.
Go, get away. 13 before 4, good afternoon, Swinging Radio England.
And now, another typical episode in the life of a Radio England listener.
Hello there, everybody, this is Little Red Riding Hood, and with me is the Big Bad Wolf. Hello, Wolf.
Hello, Red. Hey, Red, what you got in that basket, huh? Let me see in that basket, Red.
Okay, just lift up the lid.
Boss Radio.
Larry Dean was also 22 and a close friend of Ron O'Quinn. He too had been born and brought up in Moultrie, Georgia.
Monday, Monday.
Boss down 4.
It just turns out that way.
Monday, Monday. Mamas and the Papas, Swinging Radio England. Much more music on the Larry Dean Show. Weather, 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 weather. Look for partly cloudy skies this afternoon. Look for partly cloudy skies this afternoon. Chance of late afternoon showers, turning mostly cloudy tonight with rain. High today, 72 degrees Fahrenheit. Low tonight, around 54. Currently, 69 degrees in the wide and wonderful. The British Isles and the continent's only way to Boss. Dave D. Dozy, Beaky, Mick, and Titch. Hold tight. 13 before 1, Swinging Radio England with much more music. Larry Dean till 2 o'clock. Ron O'Quinn, 2 to 6 p.m. Do it, do it.
Of the other DJs on Radio England at the start, Rick Randall was from the same background as the other three Americans.
Simon and Garfunkel, I Am a Rock for Deborah and Mickey of the Tartan Coffee Bar.
And the rock feels no pain.
Yes, indeed, believe it or not.
And an island never cries.
Tartan Coffee Bar, that's in Felixstowe. They wanted to hear that. Crazy, I don't know why. There's certainly no rock. Soft and woolly. Oh, no, never mind. Anyway, friend. 13 before 6 o'clock. Good afternoon to you on the Randall Rambles. At about 6 o'clock, Johnny Walker time. Boss Radio.
Swing and radio.
Much more music, 24 hours a day. Currently, 67 degrees on the outside. I'd like to say hi also to Jenny in Great Yarmouth, but also at a couple of good boats there. A couple of boats I was up on the deck today. We have kind of a rough sea today, in case you haven't noticed. You know, records jumping all over the place. At any rate, I'd like to say hi to those guys over the other boat, because I noticed they're getting pretty close to each other out there. And, well, they've been doing a pretty good job lately. Got to pat them on the back. You know, every time something good comes along, you notice everything else seems to get a little bit better. So, thought I'd throw that in. These are the Beach Babies, the Boss Radio.
Roger Day.
Rick Randall was a lovely man. One of the best, actually. The rest tended to be very aggressive. And I was under the impression they didn't like the English too much. I just got the feeling that they thought we were a little bit stupid. Probably were to them. New boys to radio. But they tended to make it known a lot. No, Larry Dean was always very, very kind. And so was Rick Randall. And he was a sort of fatherly figure who put his arm around you, and not for any, you know, sexual reason, I might add. There are a lot of those on the ships, we all know. But, so he'd say, look, why don't you try it this way? And you know, I learned a lot from him.
The remaining DJs and newsreaders were Brian Tilney, who, apart from bingo calling, had also been a former manager at the London Palladium, Australian Colin Nicol, who'd come from the Mi Amigo, and Englishman Phil Martin.
I was working in advertising at a firm called Lintas. I was a Unilever graduate trainee, whatever that means. I'd left university and gone for this excellent job in London. And I was sharing a flat with some friends in London. And they ran a pop PR agency, and they introduced me to Rick Randall. Came along to our flat, and he just said, asked me to read a few lines or something. And said, sounds fine to me, come along and join us. So I went out basically on a trial basis, really. I hadn't actually any real intention of joining them, but I took 3 weeks off from Unilever for my holidays, and went over there, and thought, this is the life for me. And threw in, would never dream of doing that these days, and jobs are so hard to get, this one marvellous job with Unilever, and went to sea. I was given them some title. I think I was even programme director of Britain Radio, whatever that meant. And I also worked on the news.
The news was, even for the 1960s, presented in a mind-boggling style, with echo, electronic bleeps and jingles that proclaimed,
you are listening to Radio England News, Europe's most comprehensive news service.
However, the news was at least initially compiled in a more professional way than Radio England's rivals.
We actually had one of these ticker tape machines, but unfortunately our own transmissions used to interfere with the reception, and a lot of the time the words on the tape were jumbled up. So after a while we abandoned this and went back to doing what the other pirates were doing, which was, of course, nicking the news from the BBC.
The amazing presentation style of the bulletins was a challenge to most presenters.
Radio England banner line. This news is big news in the world now.
This is Rick Randall reporting Radio England banner lines, a feature of the Radio England Department of News and Public Affairs.
The big story.
Leningrad following a series of spectacular visits. In the Soviet Union, including an exclusive scientific research center and a top-secret rocket launching site, French President
England
Charles...
Banner line. This news is big news in the world now.
This is Roger Day reporting Radio England banner lines, a feature of the Radio England Department of News and Public Affairs.
The big story.
London. Edward Heath today attacked the government on the economic...
It was like flying Concorde, but at the end they had this classic weather jingle. And they had a countdown. 10, 9, counting down to 1. And of course you were meant to pace the weather, so it went out over this 10 down to 1. So you finished when it got to 1 and zammed into the jingle. First time I read the news, I finished at 8. I gabbled it so much because I was so nervous. And I finished at 8 and I just sit there. And it went 7, 6.
Look for partly cloudy skies for this afternoon with a chance of late afternoon showers turning mostly cloudy tonight with rain. High today 72 Fahrenheit with a glove tonight of 54. Currently at 69 degrees in a wide and wonderful...
Later, the news format was changed, but it was no less complex to handle.
Space News Hotline.
From the north, east, west and south, this is Radio England News, live and up to the minute at 7:15. Alan Black reporting in the public interest. Hotline newspapers. The owners of the national newspapers have had talks with union officials about...
They sprinkled it on their rice pudding in the belief that it was oatmeal. The Radio England weatherscope reports... This evening is expected to be cloudy over most areas with some light rainfall, chiefly in the south and west. In the east, it should remain dry but cloudy. Temperatures will be around the seasonal average with an expected high of 61 degrees Fahrenheit. Winds in the east will be light and variable. Ed Marina reporting for Radio England.
The station that keeps you informed.
News every hour, more music now.
Radio City's famous Auntie Mabel Hour, instigated by Australian Ian McRae and Alan Clark, ran a parody of Radio England News.
Well, welcome back to the Auntie Mabel Hour. Swaying Radio Workshop.
Swaying Radio Workshop.
From the north, east, west and south, this is Radio Workshop News.
Live and up to the minute.
This is Bang Bang Brannigan reporting in the public convenience. Dateline, Buenos Aires. Thursday's military coup, which was repeated as a special matinee on Saturday, will now be repeated at all 11 o'clock sessions.
The conditions on the laissez-faire were less than ideal, as Johnny Walker recalls.
The worst thing from our point of view, but there was no extra cabin accommodation on the ship. There were cabins at the stern end of the boat for the captain, the first engineer, the cook, there was a galley. And then at the bow end of the ship, there were some pretty rough cabins for, half a dozen crewmen. And they were all occupied. There was nowhere actually set out for DJs to sleep. So we ended up having to lie on blankets in a dark, damp hold in the boat. I mean, it was just awful.
Roger Day.
I'd never experienced anything like the conditions that I experienced on there. I mean, none of the living quarters were ready, because all the program director and his assistant, the American guys, had got all the crew cabins that were spare, and the rest of us had to sleep, I remember, in the lounge. I use that term very loosely. and we all had to sleep in sleeping bags on the floor of this lounge, which was next to the big freezers. And they were very large freezers because this ship had been a body ship transporting dead American GIs back from the Vietnam War to America, because they always take their dead home, you see, the Americans, unlike the British who have war graves there, they always ship their dead back home. And not only did we have the crew coming in to pick out these large sides of beef every now and again and waking us up in the middle of the night, we also had great company of a load of cockroaches, I remember, and the local sport was stamping on the cockroaches. It was pretty appalling having these things crawling all over you. But gradually, of course, as in most things, they built their cabins and things got a little better, although they were never as luxurious as the other pirates.
Both Radio England and Britain Radio Studios included Ovation programmatic tapes and automation units, the first to be used in Britain.
Joni Summers with Neil Hefti and the tune, A Wonderful Guy.
Britain Radio, hallmark of quality listening, and the time is 18 now and a half minutes past four.
It was designed so on a Q-tone, the jingles that operate the reel-to-reel tapes, on which there would be music and introductions, and on a cue tone at the end of the music, would set in motion the carousels. One would have the ads on, and all the jingles. And at night they used to switch to this on Britain Radio in the early days. And I remember sometimes I just used to sit in there with the lights out, and you'd have this deep American voice saying, Frank Sinatra and Strangers in the Night, and then blip, 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 and all these things would be set in motion. It was really weird, you know, after a few beers you sat in there and it was like ghosts were around. Absolutely amazing.
In the early weeks, Radio London DJs were approached by Radio England. Tony Windsor was chief announcer of Radio London at the time.
When Radio England started, they were, of course, offering our disc jockeys fabulous salaries. And this caused a problem for me because I had to advise them. But I got out of a taxi cab in Savile Row one day, and I met Cliff Richard, and he said, you know about Radio England, they're going to call their disc jockeys boss jocks. And I gave him the biggest hug of my life, because I knew that the English public wouldn't take the word boss jocks. And I could confidently go back, as I did 2 days later, to the ship, and I said, gentlemen, forget Radio England.
At WMCA in New York, there was a voice that listeners to English pirate radio stations knew very well.
Yes, you gotta earn it. That's the Good Guy Sure Shot with the Temptations. WMCA here on the Jack Spector Show. Let's give away another Good Guy sweatshirt to Betty Mayhew. Yes, you may, Betty. Betty Mayhew of Trinity Street, Yonkers, New York.
This is WMCA New York.
Home of the Good Guys.
Right.
Gardens offers plenty of great dance music.
Radio Caroline had signed a contract with Jack Spector, a top New York DJ, to supply tapes for both Caroline ships.
From New York City, it is the Jack Spector Show for Radio Caroline. La 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 la. Take the pledge, raise your right hand to your leader. I will have no other leader after my leader. Jack Spector.
What do you make of my mouth shut, man? I just opened the show. I gotta say hello, right? Am I entitled to say hello to my millions of fans out there?
You're some dummy.
I never denied that for a second. It's just I happen to be a great disc jockey, man.
Soon, another New York voice from WMCA was to be heard on the airwaves of Britain.
Come on, baby, light my fire, will you please? Thank you very much, dear. That's the Doors, number 4. You're on to Gary Stevenson. It's Monday night, WMCA here in New York. Good Guy Radio!
Yeah, yeah, yeah! WMCA, yeah, yeah!
Come on down to my boat, baby!
The Gary Stevens tapes supplied to Radio England mostly consisted of the distinctly New York sounds of Gary Stevens, repeating the same information in every link.
Come on, let me hear you cry one time. 96 tears, that's question mark in the Mysterians, and you're on the Gary Stevens show. I'm swinging Radio England. Nice to be with you. It's Monday afternoon. We do it every weekday, Monday through Friday, from 5 until 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, you can't hurry live, Supremes, and that's a great sound from swinging Radio England. You're on the Gary Stevens show. Nice to be with you. We do it every afternoon, Monday through Friday, from from 5 until 6.
Oh, yeah, Temptations. Beauty is only skin deep. I've heard that, yeah. Hey, you're on the Gary Stevens Show. This is Swinging Radio England. It's Monday. Nice to be with you.
You'll find the fun radiates around Swinging Radio England.
During 1966, the Batman craze was in full flood. Spot Productions, one of the smaller Dallas jingle companies, had decided to cash in with a series of jingles which would associate radio stations with the Batman craze. Unfortunately, to actually sing Batman would have incurred copyright infringement, so the singers were instructed to sing That Man and to slur their singing sufficiently so that it would sound like Batman to most radio listeners. Radio England had a particular reason for needing a new package of jingles. Roger Day.
In the early days, we got these jingles, and test transmission particularly, we just let the jingles go all the way through without talking over them. And of course, those swines on Radio London and Radio Caroline were listening, and Radio Caroline, they taped them, and the next day they came on with our jingles, with our name edited out, and Caroline on there, and we were accused of copying them, and it was our jingles! We were furious! And that was the first set. But anyway, we thought because of that, we needed a new set of jingles. So they went back to America and wanted their latest set. And the latest set was the Batman set, the time of the popularity of the Batman series. And that time, we used to talk all over them, so the other radio stations couldn't pinch them.
Twackle! It's Roger Day on Swinging Radio England.
Batman! See by the square root of the computer and the Batman, data accumulated.
Another original programming idea that Radio England presented was a weekend of golden oldies.
That's Black and Swinging Radio England, the song I Couldn't Live Without Your Love. It's the former Bob Scott big hit on your Much More Music station. You are just hours away from the Swinging Radio England great gathering of the golden goodies. Another first for
Pop Radio.
Swinging Radio England, this is the Larry Dean program because we love you. We got an oldie goldie for you. There's the Yardbird.
There were evidently areas of friction between the English and American DJs, as Roger Day explains.
There were these upstarts coming along and pulling all the mail. It wasn't because we were any better, it's because we were English, of course. And people really couldn't relate to these slick Americans. I mean, I thought they were great. But, you know, the British are slow to latch onto anything. You know, we pulled the mail. It didn't do us any good.
On Thursday, the 28th of July, Radio England threw what they described as the party of the year at the Hilton Hotel, where the advance party from the station had been staying since their arrival in the UK. The bill was unpaid, but the Hilton management could be forgiven for thinking that Radio England was successful, as the guest list included Benny Hill, Ray Ellington, David Nixon, Tom Jones, Rolf Harris, Dusty Springfield, Joan Turner, Wilfred Bramble, Edmundo Ross, Nicholas Parsons, and a host of famous faces from the world of show business.
We even advertised it on air, which is nonsense, because no listener could go, and they were running plugs for it.
During August of 1966, Radio England arranged a concert tour, Swinging 66.
It's another fun first for Bob's Radio. Swinging Radio England is going on tour. Radio England is proud to present your top pop favorites in the tour of the year. The Small Pieces. Crispy and St. Peter's. Guest star Dave Berry.
And who's the one who gave a shoulder when you told her your first love was over? She'd met someone older, Mama.
Who will be replaced by Wayne Fontana for the two London dates. Also on the bill will be the Limey, the Cubas, and the Radio England Much More Music Men. Starting August 12th, Swingin' 66 will be visiting these towns. Lewisham, Finsbury Park, Birmingham, Sheffield, Leeds, Glasgow, Newcastle, Liverpool, Manchester, Cardiff, Exeter, Southampton. The box offices are open now, so get your tickets early for the fun tour of the year, Swingin' 66.
There's only one man for this job.
It's Gary Medwick on Swingin' Radio England.
The venues were compared by the Much More Music men from Radio England, Larry Dean, Jerry Smethwick and Roger Day.
We started off doing the tour. The other two were ditched for the same reason, although I was not very good. I was English and related more to the audience, and the poor American guys got ditched. No wonder they hated us so much. They were put back to the ship, and I was left on my ownsome to compare this tour, which was very nerve-wracking. I'd never done anything like it before. And having to fill in between bands while they changed over their equipment, which could be anything up to 10 minutes, and try to talk to the audience. I mean, I'm not a comedian. And how on earth I did it, I really don't know. I used to do stunts like bash people in the face with crazy foam and things like that. It was just slapstick, which I thought was a better way of doing it, because I couldn't stand up and tell jokes. The problem was, we did okay in the areas where you could hear Radio England, but a lot of the tour went all over Britain, where you couldn't hear Radio England. And quite often we'd arrive at the theatre, and they'd be taking down, it was all cinema stuff, of course, Odeons and that, and they'd be taking down the sign that said what film was on that evening, and just putting up, on the afternoon we were on, no film tonight. Tonight, well, one night only, The Small Faces. And, of course, there was nobody there. I remember The Small Faces, although they had a number one record and Crispin St. Peter's was in the charts at the time, as was Dave Berry, and should have been a sell-out tour just on talent alone. We were playing to halls of just 200 kids, and The Faces had a number one record and were established artists. It was appalling. It was an atrociously organised tour. In fact, so many things about Radio England were so badly organised, and this was just one of them. I mean, Brian Tilney was the tour manager, and poor guy, he tore what little hair he had out because he just got no backup from the London office and lost a fortune. You know, I got paid. In fact, it's the one station I ever worked for, and they didn't finish owing me money, which is more than I could say about the others. But, no, it was an appalling event and lost a fortune. But I had a great time, of course, you know. Hotels paid for all over the country, and it was fabulous, but no way was it a commercial success.
Perhaps to recoup some of the losses, Radio England began to advertise what must have been a rather large pile of programmes from the tour.
Did you miss the tour of the year, Swingin' 66?
Yes.
Well, don't fret, because you can capture some of the excitement of the show by sending now for a souvenir programme, hand autographed by all the stars, including The Small Faces,
Wowie!
Dave Berry, Crispin St. Peter's and Neil Christian.
Oh, boy.
Just send 2 and 6 plus sixpence for postage to Programmes, care of Swingin' Radio England, 32 Curzon Street, London, West 1. That's 2 and 6 plus sixpence for postage to Programmes, care of Swingin' Radio England, 32 Curzon Street, London, West 1.
I don't like the sound of this. Oh, no!
It's
no!
It's the Paimon Funny Radio. We're going into orbit.
That's the trouble with cut rate, Travi. You never can depend on it.
Swingin' Radio England.
Meanwhile, on board the Laissez-Faire, disillusion with the station's management was growing.
To give you an idea of the degree of professionalism of the organisation, and the obvious fact, as it turned out, that Don Pearson and Bill Vick really had no broadcast experience at all, was one day the tender came alongside, and this old lady clambered out of it. We thought, what the hell is this? And it turned out to be Don Pearson's mother. And she came up on board, and in the sort of mess room where we all ate, there was a little speaker up on the wall, and there's Don going with his Texas drawl, what do you think of my radio station? And then he said to her, how do you like to hear the Yellow Rose of Texas on my station, Mama? Would you like to hear that? So he said, send somebody down, tell the DJ to play the Yellow Rose of Texas. Suddenly, for no apparent reason at all, you know, on comes, you know, on this supposedly hip top 40 radio station, the Yellow Rose of Texas. You know, and there's Don with this big grin on his face. And they are, Mama. I mean, it was just, you know, it was crazy.
The original American staff, Ron O'Quinn, Larry Dean, Jerry Smethwick and Rick Randall, left around this time. Phil Martin.
I think they expected something pretty different. I think the dream had been sold to them that they would come to England and that all you had to do was produce American top 40 radio, shout Much More Music again and again, play the top 40, and the thing would be a huge and amazing wow. And in fact, pirate radio had developed already a style of its own, and it wasn't the Much More Music repetitive jingle after jingle, and the Larry Dean, I think, was the absolute past master at this kind of radio. And I think they did feel after a while that, to some extent, they'd been conned. The scene wasn't what they thought.
Roger Day.
I think Ron, to be fair to him, was fighting for better conditions on the ship for the staff. And of course, of lack of money, of course, they couldn't fulfil that. And he'd been used to being treated like a star in America and being pampered to. And of course, as they were not pampering, he thought, right, I'll get another gig. And he just went off to America. It was rather sad, really, because I never had a chance to thank him.
Over the next few months, there were many other names to appear on SRE. Boom Boom Brannigan, a 19-year-old Pennsylvanian who claimed his interests were model railways and chasing girls.
He was very much a disc jockey before his time. Not the repetitive Larry Dean type, much more music disc jockey. He had a lot of personality, had a real American voice, although it wasn't very deep because he was quite a young guy. He later got killed in a car crash. That's what I heard had happened to him. Interesting how Boom Boom Brannigan got his name. They simply had a jingle that said Boom Boom Brannigan. So along came this guy whose name I've forgotten, his real name, and he was just told, you will be Boom Boom Brannigan. And from that moment on, that's what he was. Several people got given names because they had jingles to fit them.
Chuck Blair was another American who began his career on AFN. He was later to become a well-known voice on Radio London.
Chuck Blair was older, had a lived-in face, was a lived-in sort of personality, if you like. He had been round the American radio scene for a long time. The American radio scene, I think, was very, very tough. And Chuck Blair was a product of that scene. Very, very tough. Knew what he wanted. And usually got it.
Other names to appear were Jack Curtis, Alan Black, Johnny Dark, Bruce Wayne, Errol Bruce, Tom Cooper, Ed Marino, Mark Stevens, and Bill Boss Berry.
Bill Berry, well, he replaced Ron O'Quinn as senior presenter and programme director. I remember bursting into tears because I thought I should have been made programme controller. Ridiculous when you think of it. I remember standing on deck and crying my eyes out because I thought that it was a great insult that I'd been on there since the beginning and they brought in this new upstart from America. I mean, upstart, he'd been in radio about 6 years. Of course he was going to be the programme controller. But he was a nice man and he improved the station a lot. He made it more anglified.
This is SRE, Swinging Radio England, broadcasting 4.5 miles off the Frinton Essex coast on 227 meters, 24 hours per day, in excess of 50,000 watts of power. SRE, first and foremost, is boss.
Sounds around, make it on by Oscar's Groovy Grotto, the swingingest discotheque in Essex. Open nightly with the exception of Monday nights from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m. On Tuesday and Wednesday night is DJ night when admission is free. Also on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you can have your request and dedications played for Radio England. Oscar's Grotto is a fully licensed restaurant. Swingers from miles around pop by Oscar's. Why don't you? Here's big news from Oscar's Grotto, a lineup for the end of the month. On Thursday the 27th, Brian Poole and the Tremlos. On Friday the 28th, Herbie Goins and the Nighttimers. On Saturday the 29th, the Chevelles. Don't miss it. Every night is party night at Oscar's Groovy Grotto, the swinging discotheque in Essex. And you must be 18 to be admitted.
Most of the broadcasting staff on board realised that Radio England was not gaining advertising from the well-established and well-managed radios Caroline and London. It was with no great surprise that Johnny Walker learnt of the impending closure of Radio England.
The tender used to come out every day with sort of supplies and bring in newspapers. And I remember an East Anglian Times or some such local paper came out, and somebody was looking through it and said to me, hey, have a look at this. I turned over and looked at the back page, and it was just a very small one-paragraph news item saying that one of the two stations aboard the Olga Patricia, Britain Radio or Radio England, was going to change format to a Dutch format to attract advertisers in Holland. So I thought, well, it's very unlikely that it'll be Britain Radio, which being middle of the road had only really Radio 390 and BBC Light programme for opposition. Whereas Radio England had a bad signal, it was on a bad place on the dial, it really didn't dent the established stations of Caroline and London. So it seemed perfectly logical that it would be Radio England that would change to a Dutch format, which would mean Dutch DJs. So I thought, well, this is it. I just had the feeling that this was a sinking ship and it was time to get off. So I ran downstairs, packed my bags, and this was days before I was due to go on leave, and just said, I'm leaving.
The national press soon had the story, albeit in a rather jumbled and inaccurate way.
A not-so-swinging pilot. Britain's newest pilot pop station, Swinging Radio England, is cutting broadcasting time by half, 3 months after opening. The American-backed £50,000 station on a ship anchored off the Essex coast has been fighting tough competition for teenage audiences from Radio Caroline and Radio London. From next month, it goes off the air between 7 a.m. and midnight. Its place will be taken by a new station, using the same wavelength and studio, aimed at Holland. The new Radio Holland plans pops and Dutch commercials for the Netherlands, which has had its own pirate station, Veronica, for the past 7 years. Dutch listeners were told of the new service.
Ja, ja, nog maar kort en Radio England wordt een nieuwe Nederlandse zender op 227 meter. Aanstaande maandag kunt u al gaan luisteren naar dit fijne station.
Roger Day remembers the last days of Radio England.
Read the newspaper, sure enough, there it was. Radio England to close, Dutch service to take over, Britain Radio to continue. That was shattering. I, a few more tears shed there. Because, I mean, I was so involved with the station, I thought that it was going to be number one. I thought it was only a matter of time before we overtook Caroline and London. I thought we were much more pacey and more what kids wanted. Indeed, I think we were very popular with the younger audience, because we used to play a lot of Motown as well. We used to get the exclusives from America way before anybody else. In fact, our chart was recognised as being even before Radio London's, which was always known as a trendsetter, but ours was at least 2 weeks in advance of Radio London's prediction chart, and I was proud of that. We certainly used to get the Motown releases. Of course, Motown was a big thing in the mid-60s, so we used to get all the kids listening. Indeed, to this day, I think that the biggest thing against us was the wavelength that we used. The fact that we used to get this heterodyne whistle from this million-watt German station. Of course, in the early days, we were on 355, which could be heard all over England. Now, if we'd have kept on that, we would have been the number one station, because they could hear us all over England. I actually did the close-down programme, because I was the only original jock left at that time, because Johnny had moved on to Radio Caroline, and the others had all gone their various ways, and yes, I was the only original left. So, of course, it was my honour, if you can call it that, to do the close-down programme. I wouldn't want to do it again. It was an awful experience.
From Phil Martin, from Errol Bruce, from Bruce Wayne, and Roger, you're the oldest man here. Come on around and say the final words before we say goodbye for SRE, Swingin' Radio England.
Put away my handkerchief. Oh, well, thanks, and user Bill Bayrod, Bunches for moving in, but I forget the Uppercut Discotheque. 3 nights a week, which is in London, so come down there. That's a free plug for him, no, but this big boxer guy who runs it, Billy Walker, and he says, if I don't work there, he's going to smash my face in. No, but anyway, I want to hope. He'll come down there and see me, and thanks for tuning in for 6 very vast months. So from Roger Day, hi, hello, are you, and bye, hello, are you tonight. Bye-bye.
Although the laissez-faire was still broadcasting, Radio England was gone. Philip Birch remembers speaking to the Texan backer who had left the Radio London board to set up Radio England. Those claims that he would show Philip Birch how a station should be run seemed pretty empty now.
To his eternal credit, he phoned me up one day and he said, I don't often say this in life, but you were right and I was wrong. Because it didn't, Radio England didn't work out, you know. It was rather an exciting venture. The big difference between his view and my view was that he was not in touch with the British people. That was the difference between his approach and mine. And so I think that he, with Radio England, tried to imitate American radio stations without any recognition that the British audience had been brought up in a slightly different way. They had a different background, a different attitude towards broadcasting. That needed to be taken into consideration. And as I say, to his great credit, he did concede. He'd made a mess of it.
Britain Radio and the new Radio Dolphin continued broadcasting.
Peter van den Hoven presenteert de middagshow van Radio Dolphin op 227 meter. Radio Dolphin.
Around the clock, for all the best in music, turn to us. Around the clock, for news and information, turn to us. Around the clock, for sounds of the smart set. Now don't you forget, turn to Hallmark of Quality Britain Radio.
You're listening to Britain Radio, 355 meters in the medium wave band. This is Britain Radio, up-to-the-minute news. Tom Cooper reporting the news at 9 o'clock. The Supervisors and Technicians Union is to start legal action to challenge the government's order to stop Thorn Electrical Industries paying its members an increase. The union's general secretary, Mr. Clyde Jenkins, said that they've advised that the order might be ineffective and were going to test it out. In Italy, troops have been working through the night repairing the broken dikes. The river is continuing to rise and more storms are forecast. It'll be rather warm in England and Wales today. That's the Britain Radio News at 9 o'clock. Tom Cooper reporting. Next news on the hour.
Hi, hello, and how are you? This is Alan Black welcoming you to the Tuesday morning edition of... Yes, indeed, what is the title? It's Morning Serenade, of course. How could I make such a mistake? I'm not awake yet. That's the trouble, you see. It's 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. I know I should be awake, but it'll take me a few more minutes to wake up. And while I do, why don't we hear something from Cliff Richard in Latin Stars, though? Here he is with Esso Besso.
As the new year of 1967 began... The Don Pearson Bill Vick management team, who had run the laissez-faire from the beginning, began to falter. The Radio England Britain Radio project, which had begun with such high hopes, had so far been a sad tale of failure and disappointment. Amid speculation of financial irregularities and growing unease by the original backers, pressure was being applied on Pierre Vick to hand over the management of the ship. The new managing director was to appear very soon, and from quite an unexpected direction.
390 time is now just after 6 o'clock. Radio 390 presenting Eve, the woman's magazine of the air, takes you stateside.
Secretary faced summonses for unlawfully using a wireless transmitter without a license.
When the hearing started, Sir Peter Rawlinson QC is appearing for Radio 390 immediately...
Radio 390 had been receiving its share of troubles with a protracted court case brought about by the British Post Office. The trials centred around whether 390's Red Sands Tower was within territorial waters. The managing director of 390 was Ted Albury, a former colonel in the Army Intelligence Corps, and later to achieve a great deal of success as a writer. Ted remembers his departure from 390 after a boardroom disagreement. Britt Wagner, the Swedish pirate radio station owner, had offered to rent 390 her radio ship, the Cheetah 2.
I was offered then by the Swedish lady the boat, because it was obvious that we would be safer on the boat. Because of this case in court, we were more vulnerable to attack by the post office and the law in general than somebody on a boat. And my fellow directors wouldn't agree to letting this lady share in our profits for having the boat and its equipment for nothing. And at that point, I walked out.
Ted Albury was soon to find himself running a radio ship, not the Cheetah 2, but the laissez-faire.
Well, the people who owned and ran the laissez-faire had been in touch with me on several occasions saying, you know, is there something that we could do to merge or, you know, have you run our operation for us? I'd put this up to my fellow directors who wouldn't have any of it. So having had this contact fairly frequently, and I liked their attitude because the people who owned that operation actually cared about radio. They were gung-ho. They were mainly Texans. and I rather liked them, and once I was working for them, I liked them even more. I think what was typical of them was when I was considering moving to them, when all this hoo-ha was going on the board of Radio 390, I said, well, I'd like to have a look through your books and your records and so on, which they let me do. And they said, you know, what do you advise? And I said, quite frankly, I advise you not to throw good money after bad, because you're merely going to lose more money by hanging on until the act comes in. And they said, for heaven's sake, you know, we're Texan gentlemen. How much money would it take to hang on till the end? And I told them, and it was far more than had ever gone into Radio 390. And they said, yes, all right, well, if you'll run it, we'll put that money up for you to continue running it. And I was very impressed by that.
Ted Albury left 390 to set up his own company, Carstead Advertising, together with John Withers, who, coincidentally, was Tony Windsor's brother. From now on, Britain Radio and Radio Dolphin would be run by them. Britain Radio would be renamed Radio 355, and it would adopt the same format as 390. Immediately, Jack Curtis, Britain Radio's general manager, resigned for, as he put it,
professional and personal reasons.
Ted Albury had called Britain Radio's sound a lucky dip. Curtis had retaliated by calling the proposed program format of 355
Stone Age Radio. It's a series of segmented dirges stitched together by sterile announcements.
Another drama was soon to unfold itself around the laissez-faire. The American captain had left around this time and had been replaced by an English captain. Dave McKay takes up the story.
He went off the ship for a weekend, and during the period of time that he left the ship, our first mate, who was also English, jumped ship because he was offered a deep-sea job. Also, we'd had one of our two marine engineers who had failed to return also from leave. So the ship as such was down to the Dutch broadcasting crew, our two English transmitter engineers, the English broadcasting crew for Britain Radio, a couple of deck boys, one engineer for the marine side, and a cook. It wasn't a particularly pleasant winter. We'd had one or two periods where the North Sea was fairly calm, but we got caught in a spring tide. That spring tide was followed by a force 8 to force 9 gale, and the ship took a tremendous pounding. We didn't have a really experienced seaman on board to decide precisely what to do in terms of facing the ship into a particular direction. But what happened was the wind pressure, coupled with the buffeting on the ship, started breaking the stainless steel guy lines that held our mast, which I believe was 180-odd feet in height. And after a number of hours, the top 83 feet sheared off. That brought down with it the two cage aerials that we use for transmission. And the tangle of guy lines, coupled with the aerials themselves, and this 83 feet that came crashing down, fell into the sea, created a great deal of drag, which meant that the ship took on quite an alarming list, about 15 degrees. To try and prevent this furtherance of damage, we got the engine started, and we tried to face the ship out of the prevailing gale. We got into wet weather clothing, and we managed to lash the wreckage. We couldn't cut it free, but we managed to lash it to the side of the ship so that the ship didn't take on quite such an alarming list. We had alerted the Coast Guards, who had indeed in turn alerted the lifeboats. We thought at one stage we might need to use the lifeboat service, and the Manston Air Sea Rescue helicopter came out and took a peep at us as well. But fortunately the weather calmed down just a little bit, and we managed to make things secure enough. Interestingly enough and funnily enough, when the aerials came down into the sea, the transmitter system should have switched off automatically. It didn't, and there were one or two smoulderings on the deck transformer that served the two aerial cages. We did, in fact, switch the transmitters off manually, but we forgot to tell the Radio Dolphin disc jockeys, or indeed the Britain Radio disc jockeys, that we were off air, and for something like 2 hours they continued broadcasting while these quite horrendous events were happening on deck.
Ted Albury also remembers this disaster.
The moment I took over, the very first piece of news that I had, we had very posh offices then in Curzon Street. You know, very ornate after my Pimlico place with the snow coming through the roof. Beautiful rooms and a beautiful garden at the back. and I felt very lost in that. And as I stepped through the door on the very first morning I went there, there was the message waiting to say that the boat had been dismasted. Now, what should we do now? And there were two of the Texans over, and it looked like, you know, one more reason not to go ahead, but no way.
So the Texans were determined to see the station back on the air again with Ted Albury in control. Back on board the ship, Dave McKay was preparing for a trip to the Weissmuller ship repair yards in Holland.
Our skipper came back on board. Messages from London flashed out to the ship. We had one or two visitors to assess the damage. And then most of the English and indeed Dutch disc jockeys were summoned off the ship. I remember that I was allowed to remain on board to look after the radio side with our two transmitter engineers, Ted Walters and Bob Giddes. And I think Alan Black remained on board as well for a while. We received instructions to up anchor and sail to the Weissmuller yard at Zaandam near Amsterdam. And it was very much a case, once again, of all hands to the pump, because we didn't have adequate ship's crew to man the thing. So it was a case of those of us on the broadcasting side that still remained on board ship to take our turns at the wheel and do our shifts at the wheel to drive the boat across to Holland. We went through the lock system, and we hove to in the Weissmuller yard at Zaandam. And obviously the wreckage that remained on deck was, in fact, cut away so that the repair work could be assessed. Dutch customs were very, very, very interesting. They came on board and they decided to seal off the transmitter room and the studios. They sealed the transmitter room off quite well. They didn't, in fact, seal the studios off at all well. Indeed, as time weighed quite heavy on our hands during that refit period, that meant that to entertain ourselves, we used to go down into the studios and play records and then put the custom seals on back afterwards, after we'd finished.
One of the original backers, and the person who had supervised most of the original installation, Tom Denahar, flew over from Texas to visit the Weissmuller yard. He was there to supervise the new mast going up, and soon things began to move again. Dave McKay.
Eventually, the monies came through. A large floating crane was brought alongside the ship. The new section of the mast was installed. The aerials were replaced. Not quite, I remember, to our chief engineer's specification, but sufficient for us to get back on the air. However, the one thing we did manage to do with the transmitters on the laissez-faire was we used to run them at very high modulation. Certainly very high modulation in comparison to BBC land-based transmitters, which meant that for a comparatively small amount of power, we could get a very clean signal. But we were out of service completely for about 6 weeks in total.
Soon the ship was back in position, but the format was going to be radically different. Ted Albury planned to emulate his own successful formula on Radio 390, a formula which he had dreamed up on the kitchen table of his farmhouse in Romney Marsh. Primarily, 390 had aimed at women listeners with cultured and softly spoken announcers, quite unlike any of the other pirate stations.
Your Continental Cabaret was introduced by Mark Hamilton. Our next program follows in just a few moments. Tonight's edition of The Voice of Business covers a range of subjects of interest to farmers and agricultural engineers. If you're a farmer or have friends who are farmers, remember Friday's Voice of Business becomes The Voice of Agribusiness. Tonight at 7:30.
Dave McKay remembers how they heard about the planned format changes on the laissez-faire.
Interestingly enough, the first thing we heard was that we were going to get four or five of the disc jockeys from 390. And that included David Allen, who's now, of course, doing country and western programmes and continuity for BBC television, Stephen West, and a few others. Now, they brought with them the 390 radio format. Now, that was a patchwork quilt of radio programmes, 15 minutes of keyboard cavalcade, followed by 15 minutes of something lightly classical, perhaps it was called intermezzo, and so on and so forth. And the chief announcer, yes, Radio 390 had announcers, not disc jockeys. That was Stephen West. And Stephen West came on board with the full authority to introduce this 390 format on Radio 355. Alan Black and myself didn't take too kindly to the change in format, the move away from easy listening, middle-of-the-road personality, strip programming into this patchwork quilt of broadcasting that had been so successful. We used to call the start of broadcasting from 390, we used to call it Deep Pile Radio, because it was rumoured that on 390 they were luxuriously appointed even to having thick pile carpeting in the record library, which was a luxury that we didn't have on board the ship, though I must admit the laissez-faire was not only well-equipped, but very comfortable. So, the Radio 355 format with the announcers, part of which were us, Alan Black and myself, and some of the 390 announcers, that went on the air. It didn't work. It didn't have that sort of sterile, clinical sound that 390 had, because we were on a boat and we had generators rumbling and tenders that bashed into the side and occasionally made turntables jump, and most of them were appallingly seasick. That was another problem. They'd been used to this life of comparative luxury on board the tower, and they didn't take too kindly to the fact that we were at the mercy of the North Sea weather. This format from 390, which works supremely well on a stable fort, did not work on a bucking bronco in the middle of the North Sea. And Ted Albury, he in fact realised this after a few weeks. His personal assistant and general manager, John Withers, was half-brother to somebody who started off his radio career as Tony Withers and later became Tony Windsor. Now, John Withers employed Tony Windsor to come out and take control of the radio output on the laissez-faire. Tony Windsor had recently left Big L, Radio London, and a few weeks later he joined us on board the ship. Now, he took one look and one listen to the sort of radio that we've been trying to emulate in terms of the station 390, and he said, this is no good, this isn't going to work. Those that can hold down three-hour radio strips can stay, and those that can't can go. Well, this meant that most of the 390 boys that came out to operate 355 in its revised format, they weren't able to sustain radio for 3 hours at a time. They'd been used to 15 minutes of this and half an hour of that, and they just couldn't get to grips with it. So, with a comparatively short period of time, we had a new broadcasting crew. TW brought forth basically the old Britain radio format, and we took on Mark Sloan, Martin Kane. Phil Martin rejoined us. There was myself, Dave McKay, and Alan Black. Also, we brought Tony Meehan down from Radio Scotland, and Jack McLaughlin. And we put the clock back, as it were, to the bright and breezy, easy-listening, middle-of-the-road format of Britain Radio, but it was called Radio 355.
Hello, this is Tony Windsor introducing yet another star of disc jockey on the new Better Music Fighter Broadcasting Station, 355. This is Dave McKay, and I'm on each day between 3 and 6 in the afternoon, so I look forward to your company on 355.
This is Radio 355. It's just a few seconds after 9 o'clock, and of course the time we've all been waiting for, time for the TW Show.
Hello. To drink from the billabong, up jumped the swag, my daddy gobbled him a tree. He stuffed the jolly jumbuck into his old tucker bag. Here come a waltzing Matilda with me. What's more now? Waltzing Matilda.
Thanks very much, Alan Black. It was a great show this morning. And good morning to you and to you, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and a warm welcome to the TW Show. We go right through till 12 noon, and we're going to have that break of coffee at 11. I hope you can join us on this, which is probably for you a very busy Friday. We're all very fit and well on board the ship here, and I hope the majority of people out there are fit and well, top of the world this morning. Those who aren't, those ill in hospital, and those at home will get round to saying hello to you a little later on in the show. Brotherville Band, Finchley Central.
Martin Kane had also worked on a fort, but he remembers conditions on 355 being a big improvement on those he had experienced on the Knock John.
For a start, the accommodation, though on 355, it wasn't spectacular compared with some of the other ships. It was certainly quite nice. The cabins had been built out of wood in something of a shanty town towards the bowels of the ship, and you had funny steps and different layers, but nevertheless the accommodation was there and the beds were comfortable. You had three hot meals a day, and you had stewards and cooks and people to look after you. The equipment was, I'd say, about 100% better than that on Radio Essex, which was mainly amateur or semi-professional equipment that was used there. 355 had, at that time, the latest equipment that was available. It was many times better, and you could do far better